Thank you. We're joined, as usual, by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
We're pleased to welcome as our special guest a Democratic candidate for Secretary of State, Nelly Gorbea. Thanks for joining us, Nelly.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
We're going to start off with some panel questions for Nelly. Tell us, why are you running for Secretary of State?
I am running for Secretary of State because I want to change the way government works here in Rhode Island. I actually want to make it work for all Rhode Islanders. And in particular, I come to this, you know, having been a former Deputy Secretary of State. So I know how the office works.
During Matt Brown's time as Secretary of State.
That's right. That's right.
And just to follow up briefly, your opponent is Guillaume de Rommel, also a Democrat. We should note, in the interest of full disclosure, the de Rommel family is a contributor to Rhode Island Public Radio. What makes you a better candidate than Guillaume de Rommel?
You know, I think that when you look at our experience, I come with 20 years plus of experience of rolling up my sleeves and working with community organizations, government agencies, with just regular folks out in the community on making Rhode Island a better place.
Let's go to Maureen.
The present Secretary of State passed what was regarded by the Brennan Law Center as a very progressive and acceptable voter ID law, which was put into place and is rolling out for full, you know, full throttle on the 2014. There has been some pushback about that. Where do you stand on that issue? What would you do if you were Secretary of State in terms of voter ID?
I actually support the repeal of that legislation. I think it was a solution looking for a problem. And I think it's very worrisome that there be any kind of barrier to something as fundamental as the right to vote. People have died for the right to vote. We've expanded the right to vote. And to suddenly put any kind of barrier, no matter how light it seems, without absolute compelling evidence that we have a problem is not a good idea.
The one that we have here was praised for being actually facilitating some of the ease in voting. The study that was done, as you know, after this past election suggested that while there were problems with the hours that the voting polls were open and changes in the voting polls, that in many cases, having the ID actually made it quicker.
Yeah, actually, the report that I read actually from Common Cause actually pointed out that it was actually really hard to tell whether that particular process helped or hindered in some of these polling places. I just go back to, I think evidence should be based on evidence.
Let's go to Scott.
How about the master lever? That's another hot button issue in Secretary of State's race. It's interesting, as a Democrat, 20% of the voters use the master lever, and yet there's been this big hue and cry from Republicans to abolish it. How do you stand?
I think it's not just from one particular part of the community. I think there are concerns across the board. That the master lever is a technology that basically a procedure that came with technology that was the old master, the old shoot lever machines. On that machine, it was clear what you were doing. When you have a piece of paper and you're just drawing an arrow, it really leads to some confusion at the polls. I would support looking at a redesign.
The State Board of Education is backing a plan to create two separate councils overseeing K through 12 and higher education. This comes after the General Assembly voted in 2012 to consolidate separate state boards for K through 12 and higher education. So, Nelly, does this plan for two separate councils make sense, or does it really look like the legislature's 2012 vote to consolidate the two boards didn't make sense?
You know, I think anytime you embark on a very significant policy change, there's always some settling of dust. And I think this is a step in the right direction. You know, everywhere I go as a candidate for Secretary of State, there are discussions about the quality of public education in Rhode Island. Full disclosure, I am a faculty spouse. My husband actually is a faculty member at the Oceanography School of the University of Rhode Island. So what happens at the Board of Higher Education, or the Board of Education at this point, is important to us. But I think, you know, that's a really wide span, pre-K through graduate school. And I think that being able to tailor this a little bit more towards the specific age groups is actually a step in the right direction.
What do you say, Scott?
I think it was foolish the way they did it. It really was done at the last minute in the legislature. Only three or four states in the country have one board for K through graduate school. And it didn't make a lot of sense when they first did it. They didn't have adequate study. So I can see them taking another look at this and trying to unwrap it.
Maureen, what's your evaluation of this support for two separate education councils?
I think it looks better than it did when it was consolidated. Clearly, there was a need for organizational reform, particularly on the higher ed side. I mean, we know that office was certainly not lean and mean. It used to be a holding pen for policy people from the governor's office. So I think from that standpoint, and from the standpoint of the amount of work that had to be done by that board in terms of what all the three institutions of higher learning, I think there had to be some readjustment. My concern is, and we still have to wait and see, is the whole idea is to give a little more autonomy to the three institutions. And if that happens, and if that is part of the plan, then I think it definitely is a step in the right direction. But that remains to be seen. Politicians don't like to give up that kind of influence and power, but it really would be more, I think it would be better for the institutions if there was some autonomy rolled down to them.
Republican gubernatorial candidate Ken Block scored a coup this week with the acquisition of longtime GOP fundraiser Tony Bucci, who's worked for people like Don Carcieri and Brendan Daugherty. Block's rival, Cranston Mayor Alan Fung, responded by citing the support of more than 20 GOP city and town chairs. Maureen, what does Bucci going to work for Block tell you about the GOP primary between Block and Fung?
I think it suggests that the GOP primary is going to be a contentious one. And as we know, we expect it's going to be a contentious one on the Democratic side. The sort of conventional wisdom was that Alan Fung would be there, and if the Democratic candidates dusted themselves up too much, he would start to look good. Well, now it seems he's going to face the same kind of problem in the sense that he's going to have to get through this contentious primary, and it could be very competitive. So we'll have to wait and see where that leads once these primaries are over.
Nellie Gorbea, we're looking at a very hard-fought Democratic primary for governor between Angel Taveras, Gina Raimondo, and possibly Clay Pell. What is your thinking on how Democrats can avoid fouling their chances by hurting one another?
You know, I think in the end, it's about giving people choices. So I don't know that there's a way to sidestep these kinds of primaries. I myself am in a primary. And so, you know, you it's a good way to test people's mettle, to see how much they can bring to the office. And, you know, the voters will decide. Democracy is good.
Scott, what do you make of Tony Bucci going to work for Ken Block?
I don't make a lot of it, because what happens, a lot of this is based on money. You know, if you're going to sign up as a consultant for someone, you're going to get a piece of the action, and perhaps Block simply offered him more money than Fung. The interesting thing about Republicans in this state is their primaries have not nearly been as contentious as Democratic primaries. 1994, Ron Makely and Link Almond had a face-off, and yet it didn't hurt Almond when he ran for governor. He won. In 2002, it was Jim Bennett and Don Carcieri. And Carcieri was able to pull out of that primary with very, very little problem and win the general against Democrat Murth York.
A study on the impact of not paying back investors in failed video game company 38 Studios hasn't been done. The Providence Journal reports that's because there were no bidders on the project to complete the $50,000 study. Nellie, what do you make of this? Why were there no bidders to do this study?
You know, I think that this is one of those cases where you have to go beyond what's being done. And in government, we have to look at solutions in partnership with other institutions. I think that this may be the case where a partnership with a higher education institution that can take a look at this particularly singular problem might be a reasonable approach. I think in the end, what's really essential is that government decisions be based on policy analysis, the actual data, and the evidence, because that's the way we build good public policy.
Maureen, the fiscal staff for the House and Senate is well respected. Some people have suggested that those offices should do this study. What do you think of that idea?
Well, I think it's a real problem because of no bidders, it suggests this is a political question less than an accounting question. And I think that's why people are shying away from it. The interesting thing to me is our friend Seidel now has volunteered.
You're talking about Ted Seidel. Ted Seidel, the former SEC fellow who has been a sharp critic of Gina Raimondo.
Exactly. And it seems that he wants to get into the mix. So I think this will be a very interesting and, again, a very political kind of situation as these questions about 38 Studios roll out.
Scott, the ask for the legislature to pay back 38 Studios investors is due to go up in 2014 from $2.5 million to $12.5 million. What do you make of the lack of bidders for the study on not paying back those investors?
It's a real problem for the state. We all know that. However, I do think that right now, as far as the taxpayers go, the best hope is the lawsuit that Governor Chafee's filed and hired Max Wistow, a very prominent lawyer in our state, to chase in. Some of these institutions are very big people with deep pockets, Wells Fargo being the most prominent. It's going to be easier for them to pay this than it is for the state, frankly.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us on Political Roundtable. Scott.
Thank you.
Maureen.
Thank you.
And a Democratic candidate for Secretary of State, Nellie Gorbea.
Thank you.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoy the conversation, please visit our On Politics blog at ripr.org.